We'll go ahead, since we have our esteemed senator here, we'll go ahead and start out with the public hearing on Senate Bill 716.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. And yes, Vice Chair Tomei, we apparently have skinny streets on the schedule tomorrow. So this is exciting. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. You're going to hear more detail from members of the audience behind me who have set to testify. I'll let them do that. But I wanted to take the moment to commend this bill to you. It was brought to us by the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans Association, Kevin is here, and others, to address an issue that has evolved over a period of time, and I really think this helps get to that issue. And this is to make sure, especially, that of all of our disabled population, those that are in wheelchairs actually have access to those spaces. You'll hear that this does not create any more spaces, but it does create a distinction within large parking lots and others to make sure that there are some of the van spaces, and at least some of those are specifically designated for wheelchair. I will tell you that there was a really interesting example where my staff person, Ryan Tribbett, had a guest coming in who was wheelchair-bound to testify on a food stamp bill in the House of Representatives and came and could not park out front of this building. Now, this is not a parking lot, but I think this addresses the access issues that people are facing, particularly in metropolitan areas. And we were taking pictures of these cars that are regularly, and if they're out there in the audience hearing me in the building, all four of the spaces right in front of the Capitol were taken by members of the lobby who daily park there as their regular. Now, they have a permit, but they're going back in the building, speaking to you and me and everyone else, and here a lady showed up in a wheelchair and could not get that because these spaces were permanently occupied on a daily basis by people with legitimate disabilities, but not, say, as disabled as a lady in a wheelchair and had to come significantly far away. This bill helps address that, is to say, let's make sure that some of these spaces are for the people who have wheelchairs, and also allow cities and counties to be sure to, I mean, cities to be able to regulate parking, which is the other part of the bill, for people, and make sure that access for citizens is there. And especially as the number of permits have grown, parking spaces haven't grown in many cases. And so managing that population so that access is ensured for our disabled population is important. I really appreciate the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans bringing this forward, helping to recognize that we need to kind of work this a little bit better to make sure that the most severe disabilities people have access to the businesses and services when they come to visit. That's my only comment. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer it, but you'll get more background from the advocates who actually brought the bill forward with Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Senator, I just want to compliment you on helping shepherd this piece of legislation forward. This makes a lot of sense.
Well, I appreciate that. Again, it wasn't my bill. These folks did it, but I was very pleased that my committee worked it pretty hard and had a lot of support, and I think it's going to do good things to help manage this population. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We'll see. Where we go here? Anthony Marks, going to come up. I'm going to call up Penny Edwards. Is there room up there for everybody?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'll bring you two up first. Just identify yourself. And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Marks. I am the president of Oregon Paralyzed Veterans. I've been in a wheelchair for approximately 26 years. I've been involved through the handicap parking issue since 1986. Working back with Senator Roberts a long time ago brings back a lot of memories. The reason I'm here testifying is because I've been hit three times in parking lots in my wheelchair. I'm one of the few that still are around doing things like this. How I got injured in these different instances was that the handicapped parking spots, not just the van accessible, but the other ones, were already taken. So that forced me to go park out in the general populace of the parking lot, which then I have to wheel behind the vehicles. All three of the vehicles that I got hit by were backing up. Now, my height If you have a four-wheel drive truck, you cannot see me. It's impossible to see me. So I try to stay out of the lane. Well, I stay out of the lane of traffic. People bump into me. The one time I had to hang on to the bumper to keep from getting sucked underneath. Nobody checks behind them. I'm yelling, whistling, whatever. The other time I get close to the crosswalk, another person hits me on the turn. Out of those different situations, trying to regain my composure, I wanted to see who was parked in those spots. Who is actually using those van accessible spots? Everyone that I've ever seen use those spots in those times that I've been hit for individuals who were either walking with a cane or walking with a slight impairment. Not one was in a wheelchair. The whole issue of these parking spots are for safety because of the location. It's not a matter of convenience. The reason we want to shift some of these van accessible spots are to use the spots for wheelchairs only. If you drive a van and it's modified for a wheelchair, that's what it's modified for. You're expecting that person who's driving the van either to transport a person in a wheelchair or be driven by a person in a wheelchair. We're not asking for any more spots, though eventually sometime we're going to have to address the baby boom issue for those individuals who are reaching the age that they're going to need those spots. But what we're looking at is a safety issue, guaranteeing that an individual in a wheelchair is going to be able to at least have the access up where it's safe. It's not asking for very much. Most of the disabled community does not have a problem with this because that's what it was intended for. Through ANSI and the federal guidelines, through the ADA, it's about equal access and safety. That's all we're asking for. Now, Penny's got some personal experiences of dealing with individuals who are also disabled who are using those spots and their comments about why are you using the spots. So I, if you don't mind, Ms. Chairman, I'd like to pass it over to her.
Thank you.
I'm Penny Edwards, and 6 years ago today, I started a new chapter in my life, and it was from walking to a wheelchair. And little did I know what the challenges were going to be in a wheelchair. You know, for the most part, people go and do their whatever they're going to do day in and day out. You never really think about people in chairs, you know, how they may be meeting the same challenges that you are meeting walking. Like Anthony, I've had several really close calls being hit by cars with people backing up because I was the parking spots that should have been available for me to park at was not. And I had to seek other parking spots and then, you know, make my way to the entrance of the building I was going to be going into. And on two different occasions, I came within just inches of someone hitting me. Had I not had a friend with me the second time around, she took two steps and actually was between the car and myself. These people are, you know, I don't know if it's unattentive driving or a hurry to get out of where they've been, but nevertheless, the wheelchair, the van accessible parking spot was not available. 9 times out of 10, you will drive into a parking lot and you will see a car parked there every single time. So that means you drive around and around and around, or you wait until someone comes out to take, you know, so you can get that spot. On another occasion, I was in a spot where the lift was my lift swings out and down. It's an older lift. And you have people pulling right in to you, next to you, not allowing any space at all for you to maneuver, you know, off that lift. Again, it's been because I did not have accessibility to that van parking spot. I don't know what else to say. It's been a very challenging and it's been a very frustrating 6 years sometimes, especially when you try to do everyday details like everyone else. I have expectations that, you know, I need to go and do and be, you know, on my own, not always have someone driving me. And when you want to go shopping and do all the fun things that you used to do, and yet a lot of it is very well curtailed because you do not have that accessibility to that van parking spot. And people really do not seem to, a lot of it I think is education. If people were more educated to the fact that you needed the extra space for your lift, many of them would not park in that spot. So it might, you know, help if it was there was better education for us to be able to educate the public on what our needs are as wheelchair users. And then there's people out there that just really don't care at all. It's your problem. You solve it. It's your problem. And they refuse to move their vehicles. I actually had a gentleman tell me he had two paint cans and he was in a van accessible parking spot, and I was actually had my turn signal on to turn in there, and he came clear across the parking lot and pulled in and got out of the van, out of his car, I mean, and I was right in back of him, and he goes, I said, well, do you realize that I was trying to pull in there? And he goes, well, yeah. He says, but I'm handicapped. And here he was with a pail of paint in each hand, and he totaled on into Sears. And I was so, I'm going, yeah, he really looks like he needs a van accessible parking spot for sure, doesn't he? He's not walking with anything to aid him in mobility, a crutch, a cane, you know, a walker, and certainly not a wheelchair. And he looked at me, and he was an older gentleman. And out of respect for someone older than myself, I thought, well, okay, but maybe your day's coming. You're not going to find a handicapped parking spot at all, and you're going to have to walk the extra 40, and that might not be so fun for you either. So anyway, but at any rate, then you just you go around and around and around and hope you find a place to park, and that's all I have to say today. Thank you for having me here.
I'd like to follow up with a couple clarifications. There are a lot of different disabilities that qualify underneath the handicap parking placard to receive them. From either walking unassisted for 200 feet, incontinence, there's a lot of things covered underneath that. Not all of them are required to have a certain amount of space beside a parking spot to reach that accessible point. That's why we're addressing what is considered the van accessible spots and converting some of those into wheelchair user only. It's because the amount of space that is needed to actually utilize those spaces. That is the main purpose. Not begrudging anybody who is disabled out there, but because the population is growing and the spaces remain the same number, there is a constant struggle to get that parking spot. That's why you now have everybody who is disabled using the van accessible spots, because there aren't enough spots, period. At that time, if you guys have any questions, we'd be glad to answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, this is a question for Judith. What's the implementation timeline for the additional, I apologize, I'm stuttering here. I'm assuming we're going to need to make sure that there's larger spaces available, and I'm assuming there's going to be a period of time to phase this in, or are we going to be requiring landowners to do this immediately?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, first of all, Section 2 on page 3 talks about these amendments applying to the construction or repainting.
Okay. That answers my question. Okay. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Part of this bill requires a display of a new placard for on your vehicles, and I wonder how important that is to you. It generates a bit of a fiscal impact. You don't need to worry about this. That you just tell me how important it is to you.
For enforcement's sake, it's very important in the long standing, because the placard that we have now is tied to the person. Right now, your permanent ones are all blue. They have the wheelchair insignia on it. If it was a matter of a color change, it could be simple as that. It does not have to be a very large distinction. But unless there's a distinction, then you still will have everybody saying that they're able to use that spot because there is no distinction. So it is very, very important to the whole process of enforcement. First is there's going to be an awareness when the signs change themselves by putting wheelchair only.
Yeah.
The average disabled person is going to say, okay, just like the senior citizen parking. Very few people, now I think that was probably one of the greatest moves by a lot of the stores. It actually alleviated a lot of people out of the wheelchairs in the disabled spots who were seniors. They actually prefer parking in those other spots, which has been a great asset to the disability community. But by having a change in the placard to where it's identifiable and enforceable, just takes it one more step from being a courteous change to an enforceable change.
Okay. And I should have called him up with you, but Ron Edwards, you want to come up?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I see some faces who are here that were here when I testified last time around. Greetings. My wife and this gentleman have done a great job, but what I would like to do is define why I'm interested in this legislation. This lovely lady is my wife, and I have watched her whole life change, and now... because I have tried to keep her independent. Most people do. They like their independence.
Can you go ahead and identify yourself?
My name is Ron Edwards. I live in Lebanon.
Thank you.
I apologize. I think the classic example is what we did today. The only spot we could find to park today was if you go out here on the street, on Straight Street, I think, go down about three blocks, there's a one-way street, and this street is one-way. There's a handicapped parking spot right there. And there's no aisle, but the thing was, it's also a pedestrian parking spot or walkway. So we didn't have to worry about that. One of the problems that she has had that she's talking about is she can't park in these spots. Where this problem happened with her was in Kaiser. I mean, it's a health facility. When all those spots are taken, you have to go out back. And then you traverse through all of that traffic. It isn't safe. We also live in Lebanon now where we have a new Super Walmart store. And I've been watching the traffic patterns there, and I would have to assume that that's taking place in Salem and Portland and every place else. They have van-accessible parking, but what I'm finding now is there's enough pressure on parking where people are now starting to park in the aisles, where people are supposed to roll in their wheelchairs. Okay, and I'm seeing that almost every day. So there's a great deal of pressure being put on this parking that people like my wife would utilize. Now we shop at Costco in Albany. So I spoke to the store manager. I said, if we can't park here, what we'll do is I'll just take up a parking spot and a little bit more. I'll just park the van over the white line. So I'm telling you, I'm parking illegal because that's the only way I can get her out of the van. He really didn't have a problem with that, but the problem is that other people sometimes take exception to that. I've seen people park like that, and you know what those little marks are alongside the car. Somebody's expressing their displeasure with their key as they walk by. And there's been a time she parked her car or the van, and somebody needed a nice, safe place to park, so they parked a little MG right there. So that particular day, she had to have somebody in the store back the van out for her. So she could get into the van. Now, I don't know how big their vans are, but we have what's called a small footprint on our van, which means that we only need about 3 feet of space for her to get into and out of our van. Other folks, it takes 8 feet to get out of the van safely. That has nothing to do with the aisle. So is this important? I see pressure on handicapped parking in Lebanon every day. We are blessed. We live about 200 yards from Super Walmart in Lebanon, so I see it every day. I was going to do a study for the paralyzed veterans last fall. I was going to audit the parking lots But unfortunately, there's a thing called overtime and work that sometimes gets involved, and that's all I've been doing since last October is just working. So I appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak today to this very important issue. Questions?
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Evidently, no questions. And we have Kevin O'Reilly.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm here representing the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And Senator Moons Anderson was kind enough to sponsor this bill on our behalf, and finally we wound up here. The bill is asking that one in 100 parking spaces be reserved for a wheelchair user. And the accessible parking space, a little bit of background on accessible parking before I begin the rest of my spiel. Accessible parking as a law was written back in 1973. It was originally written for persons having to be able to park there. You were a person having difficulty negotiating a 6-inch curb, which included not only wheelchairs but people with serious mobility issues. Later it was expanded to allow for those who had difficulty walking 200 feet or less. And in the mid-90s, it was expanded yet again to allow for such things as ulcerated colitis and other chronic bowel disorders. As it was originally designed, an accessible parking space allows for sufficient room for a person in a wheelchair to get in and out of their vehicle. A car space has a 6-foot access aisle that allows somebody to fully open their door. And the 8-foot access aisle is with the van accessible spaces, and that allows for the deployment of a ramp or a lift. I gave some handouts on this, and you see some pictures. The second and third pages of that handout will show pictures of a ramp and a lift-equipped van, and then the third page has a picture of somebody getting in and out of their wheelchair, out of their car from a wheelchair. And as you can see with the fella getting out of his car, he does need to open up that door fully. In the standard spot, usually you can't open up the door all the way. Another concern with these types of things is safety. And I think Tony and Penny went over safety far better than I can. I've had personally a lot of close calls, but I've never been hit in a parking lot. And I think Tony's made up for that. One of the reasons accessible parking came about was for safety reasons. Another one was just to allow the disabled person the ability to participate in the life of the community, whether that's shopping or recreation or going to work. I've been disabled for 30 years. 30 years this month, as a matter of fact. It's my anniversary. And a lot of the times when I worked, it required that I travel from place to place. I worked in construction. I'd have to hit the subcontractors, and I'd have to go by blueprint stores and building departments. And over the years, I've noticed that accessible parking has become what it was back in 1980. It's become better. Back in 1980, they were supposed to have accessible parking. Most places didn't have it yet. Over years, they put it in. Over the years, people have stopped parking there. General public would just pull into the accessible spot of the access aisle willy-nilly, if you will, and go about and do their job. And this would, of course, take up that space for somebody who was disabled. That got better over the years. More spaces showed up as they were required to by law. Over the years, people started to respect the fact that it was there. But then, someplace in the 90s, more and more placards were issued, and it's become increasingly difficult to find an accessible parking spot to go about just finish off a day's worth of work. Senator Gilman asked about a differentiation in the placard, and I think partly to do with the Senate amendment to the bill, this will help address that concern. And what happened, it's unfortunate, but what's happening in a lot of our metropolitan areas, there's a lot of placard abuse. You can pick up on the black market a parking placard for between $600 and $1,200. Which is a piece of change for stolen or a fake placard. And you have to ask yourself why. Well, parking in a lot of our metropolitan areas is pretty expensive. And if you can park free for 8 years, you can save a piece of change. And that's what, there's a lot of abuse from that. This will help address that kind of abuse. It gives cities the opportunity to say, if you can feed the meter, you have to feed the meter. The reason that a disabled person doesn't have to feed a meter today, some people with limited hand function simply can't do it. They can't hold a quarter, they can't put it in the slot, and they can't turn the meter. And that's why we let them park with no charge. At this point, if anybody has any questions that I can answer, I'll be more than happy to.
Carolyn, I'm sorry. Representative Domet.
That's my name, too. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the permits, but does not require local governments to allow free and unlimited parking at parking meters. So how would a handicapped person know whether they were required to put money into the parking meter?
They would have, the city would let them know. They would have a placard that differentiates between those who physically can't and those who physically can. So a wheelchair user.
I'm just thinking about Portland. You made an excellent point that parking, certainly, say, in downtown Portland would be very expensive. If somebody could buy one of these illegal placards, it would save them money as well as certainly be convenient. So how would Portland know whether or not this person's parking permit were legal?
We would differentiate between the two parking placards, one for a wheelchair user and one for a non-wheelchair user. We'll assume that a non-wheelchair user can feed the meter. They have the hand function. A lot of wheelchair users have enough hand function to feed a meter. Sometimes you can't get to the meter, street furniture, plantings, that sort of thing, and they'll put the meter behind those. I've had that issue more than once. But others, they just don't have the hand function to pick up a quarter.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. No other questions? Thank you. Jack Evans?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, Jack Evans of the Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 716 will require DMV to create some new wheelchair-only parking placards. To give you a little bit of background, as the disabled program operates today, there are several types of disabled parking placards, and those are temporary, permanent, family, program. There's even a foreign one and a temporary travel permit. And these provide disabled parking for individuals that fit into those categories and that are certified by a physician. Individuals submit that certification along with their application to DMV. The certification, the placard, is good for a period of 8 years. It's tied to the driver's license or the ID card. And all of them are issued free of charge. Currently, we have 175,000 parking placards in use, and we issue approximately 65,000 to 75,000 each month. The bulk of those are for individual disability placards. There's about 2,600 that fall into the family and program categories. Senate Bill 716 will require DMV to design and issue disabled parking placards solely for the use of wheelchair-only users. And these will be tied to the date of issuance of the driver's license. And I've misspoken in the testimony here. I said it's tied to the expiration to the date of issuance. We've corrected that in the bill and solved some issues there. So it would be tied to the date of issuance as are other placards. Based on estimates from the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans, we estimate that 15% or about 26,000 individuals that currently have disabled permits will want to would be eligible for the wheelchair only placards, and they would we anticipate that all of them would want to come back in with certification and obtain those placards during the first 12 months of the program. In addition, as Kevin mentioned, the A and Gross version of this bill will add a provision that authorizes local governments to decide whether or not to extend the free parking at meters and unrestricted parking and time-limited spaces to all disabled individuals. But with the placard, this will guarantee that individuals with wheelchairs will always be able to park in those particular areas. So in order to do this, there's a cost, of course, associated with this. We'll need to program the computer to create the new placard in our inventory system and allow law enforcement to recognize it. And we're looking at adding a time-limited temporary position for the first 12 months to deal with that influx of about 26,000, the estimated influx of 26,000 individuals that want to switch over to the wheelchair-only placard. So with that, I'll answer your questions.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has this bill gone to Ways and Means?
Pardon me?
Has this gone to Ways and Means, do you know?
Chair by Representative Tomei, no. This came out of the Senate committee, and it did not have a referral to Ways and Means. The LFO had indicated that they pointed out this is doesn't involve the general fund, for one thing. And at the end of the session, DMV will take a look at all the bills that impact it and develop an implementation plan that will spell out the programming that's required to its system and the number of positions that it'll need to implement these various programs. It's anticipated, LFO anticipates that there will be some efficiencies in that process, and the position, according to them, would reflect the amount of work, not necessarily a position that we would actually get and try and divvy up across 64 different offices.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have a quick question. Since we're going to a central issue process, are the placards also going to be processed that way as opposed to handed out at the DMV offices around the state?
Chair Beyer, that's a good question. The information that I have right now is that the placards for individuals and the temporary placards would continue to be issued at the branch offices. But the program and the family placards, the smaller number, would be issued centrally.
Okay.
I'm not aware of any process that will require a central issuance of all placards.
Okay. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jack, the renewal of permits, does that happen? Is there a need for continued certification from a physician, and would that change in the bill?
Chair Beyer, Representative Reed, that process would remain the same, and that process is that for the bulk of these, which are individual permanent disability permits, the individual would initially certify with a physician's statement that they meet the criteria for the disabled parking placard, or in this case for the wheelchair-only placard. At the conclusion of the 8 years, then they come in and fill out another application, and they would self-certify at that time.
Thanks.
Representative.
Jack, what are permanent and or not family and program placards?
chaired by Representative Tomei, a family placard is a placard that's issued to a family where there's more than one individual who is disabled and would qualify for the parking. A program permit, and those are good for 8 years as well. A program permit is for organizations that provide transportation for disabled, and that might be districts or different providers or different types of camps, and they also would have an 8-year placard.
Thank you. May I have a follow-up?
Oh.
Thank you. We heard from an earlier person who was testifying that sometimes that these are on the black market, that people can buy these false ones or sell them or whatever. Does DMV deal with that? Or ODOT deal with that?
Chair by Representative Tomei, no, that's an enforcement issue that we leave to local law enforcement or in some cases to the volunteer groups that Kevin coordinates.
Follow-up? Do you think that is a big problem?
Chair by Representative Tomei, I understand from the disabled veterans that it is a problem, and it sounds like it's a significant problem with the black market for these placards in some of the larger metropolitan areas.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Seeing none. Senator Metzger, are you anything else to say? All right. Okay. Well, that's all I had signed up. So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing and go ahead and open a work session on House Bill or Senate Bill 716.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 716A. to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 716A to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Representative
Madam Gilman. Chair, I'm going to, and that's not because of the community that's here. It's the Ways and Means Act. If you add a Ways and Means referral to that, I'd be happy to vote yes on this motion. But It's $120,000. By my thinking, that's twice what the threshold is.
May I respond?
You may.
My understanding is that the threshold, that there is not a firm threshold.
Obviously.
And I think that with ODOT especially, their budget is obviously so big that from what I'm hearing from Jack is that it can be absorbed, and I guess at the rebalance or whatever it's called, that would be dealt with. But does
I was just going to ask you if you would like to come up.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Beyer, Representative Gilman. And I think Jack had got to this. There's two different things. Of course, this is this is the transportation fees as opposed to general fund. But number two is what they do is, and we did talk with some Ways and Means about this, Sandy, who does the budgets for ODOT, and this is not something they want in Ways and Means. What they do is they're obligated. All these bills that you see in transportation has a half, most of them have some type of a fiscal that's noted on it. But what they'll tell you in fiscal is that they don't provide any expenditure limitation, because what they're trying to show to us in the legislature that there are, costs to doing this, but there's a number of bills that also require these same costs of programming. And so part of the overall ODOT budget in Ways and Means accounts for the fact that they're going to do, Representative Gilman, a number of these, and that's budgeted for that. So it's there to show you, so when they look at all of those, as they do the Department of Transportation budget, and they look at all the different bills that have come down that, have those programming costs in, they allocate that, those dollars are already allocated for that. So it's a visibility to you, but it's, in reality, that is already assumed in the budget of ODOT.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sensitive to Representative Gilman's issue, but I do want to state on the record that what the senator is saying is very accurate, and I bring that to you as the previous chair of the budget committee over the Department of Transportation. So it is very accurate.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just the only comment I have is I think this is an excellent bill, and I think that if it keeps people safe, it's well worth the effort.
Thank you. I do want to say I, too, have had a little concern with this fiscal, and I'm hoping that it doesn't run into any problems when it gets to the floor. But saying that, no other discussion. All right, those of the opinion, Senate Bill 716 engrossed. A engrossed should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Aye.
Steve. Representative
Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye. The motion carries. Do I have a carrier?
I'd be happy to carry that bill.
Thank you.
Thanks to all who came to testify today,
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 716A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 829. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 829A requires the Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District, which you know as TriMet, to commission an independent study of pedestrian crossings on its light rail system and to make recommendations regarding safety at those crossings. We have received a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Flores, do you want to talk on the bill? We just opened a public hearing.
Madam Chair, I think I hear someone else about to join us. Good.
In America.
Thank you for your kindness. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm state representative for House District 51. I do believe Senator Lori Montes Anderson is going to be coming as well. I hope someone has alerted her to the fact that the bill is now up. It is my privilege to introduce to you Darla Sturdy today, and she's bringing to you a bill, and she will give you the background and information pertaining to it, but she represents what the true meaning of a citizen legislature is. She's worked very hard to get hearings on a piece of legislation related to safety for bicyclists and pedestrians near MAX lines, light rail and buses. And this bill has had an interesting journey, but Senator Metzger, who just left, did give this bill a hearing in the Senate. It was amended to actually become something more than I think we had anticipated, and it did move through the Senate and is now here for the House consideration. So we certainly do appreciate the courtesy and hope for your favorable consideration. I know that before Darla speaks, Senator Representative John Lim would like to make a few comments, and I'll also defer my seat to Senator Montes Anderson. So we do thank you for your consideration, and we do hope that at the end of the day and at the end of the discussions, you too will see fit to give this bill a favorable consideration in a work session. Thank you.
Thank you.
Am I up?
Yes.
All right. Chair Byer and members of the committee and the Vice Chair Tomei. My name is John Lim, State Representative, District 50, which is all in Gresham area. And then my friend, Darla Sturdy, she's in my district. I'm sure she will explain all the background why she has to introduce House Senate Bill 829. And so I'm not going to go into detail, but as you know, you have three amendments on this Senate Bill 829. And I have seen the dollar came to my office many times, and she's emotionally charged after her son lost, it was the 2003, right? Yeah, 2003, by the unexpected that the fatal accident happened in the Croatian light rail area. And then I hope that, as Representative Flores mentioned, look at this issue, and hopefully you can change some of the amendment in a favorable way. And then the amendment is that this 829, as it written, report back to the TriMet district, but the change here, 8-7 is report back to the legislator instead of TriMet district. I think that's very appropriate. And then -8 is talking about this act as an Aaron Bridges to Safety Act. That's one thing. The other one, hopefully, this is not the easy one, but hopefully, I hope you can consider move -6, which is the safety gate at the area where Aaron has been accidentally killed. So with this three amendment, hopefully you can adopt that. She's a very wonderful lady, and I didn't know her before, but after she came to my office asking for help, I come to know her, and she has been working very hard as a citizen. And even though she lost her son, and she want to make sure in the future this accident shouldn't be repeated. Hopefully, after the passage of this bill, we might be able to get there. So that is my testimony, and now it's your turn. Sure.
Oh, you're here. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Monis Anderson from Greshamwood Village, Fairview and Troutdale. And back in January, Ms. Sturdy came to talk to me and told me about the death of her son while riding a bike along the Max lines. And he was truly a wonderful person. And Darla felt very strongly that she did not want this to happen to anyone else. And so she had some wonderful ideas and has really brought this to the attention of TriMet and to our community. And already we're seeing changes. When the MACs first went in back a long time ago, it was primarily farmland and open space. And now we have three schools, we have malls, we have crossings that have posed different problems than they were when the rail line first went in. So this bill is a very appropriate bill to see exactly what maybe dangers there are and safety. And we're not saying TriMet is not astute in addressing the safety issues, but we do really need to have it on the record that safety concerns are being addressed. And already we're seeing at one of the schools a railing being put in by one of the high schools. So I can't believe the power that this young lady has had in making a difference on safety for our children in particular. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for the two representatives, or the senator and representative? Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
So, I
want to stay until you finish.
Okay.
So, give me moral support.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here today. My name is Darla Sturdy, and I'm a general manager of a hot tub company that has 3 stores. I've worked there for 7 years. I'm here as a mother. I'm going to tell you about my son. I'm also here to explain to you why TriMet needs to install safety gates at Civic Drive and review the entire MaxLine system. I believe the legislature needs to ensure TriMet is held accountable. Like many of you, I have a family that I deeply care about and means more to me than anything. Maybe you or someone you know has lost someone close, as such as a family member. I lost my son. God blesses you with children for you to take care of, to love them, to teach them, but not to outlive them. My son had so many great qualities, though I will only touch on a few. He started baseball at the age of 5 and played 9 years. He began taekwondo at the age of 8, and at the age of 9, he went to the Junior Olympics and placed 4th in the nation. He started football in the 5th grade and played for 6 years. In middle school, he played basketball, did track, and also wrestling, placing first in many tournaments. He was student body president his 8th grade year to around 750 students and 2 years of drama in high school. During his last year of life, he and his sister became the first brother and sister of Gresham High School to ever make state at the same time in drama. He was involved in his church youth group every Wednesday night and with his high school Christian group called Soul Food. My son's name is Aaron Wagner Sturdy. He'd be the first one to tell you, do for others before yourself. My son was headed home on his dad's bike after spending the day talking to the youth group and witnessing to friends about God, church camp, when he was taken from me. I live in Gresham, the first place they started the Max Line. When they built the Max Line, it was all fields there. They were setting it up so they could take people from one side of town to the other. And when they set it up for gates for the cars, but not for the pedestrian. We've now built around the Max Line, city halls, schools, malls, apartments, etc. In the more recently constructed parts of the Max Line, pedestrian gates have already been installed. However, on the east side where Max began in the mid-1980s, pedestrian safety has gone ignored. In your packet, you will find a letter from the director of the Center for Advanced Learning, who wishes he could be here today but had prior commitments. His letter expresses that we are, quote, on borrowed time of having a fatality at this location, referencing the Cal High School Max Crossing. Following Director Lynch's letter, there are photos of this hazardous Max pedestrian crossing accompanied by citizen letters that further define the concern over the east side lack of pedestrian safety at the Max pedestrian crossing. Also in your packet is a letter from the mayor of Gresham, Shane T. Bemis. His letter states, quote, how your legislative action can enhance the livability of our community by ensuring that the public transportation system does not pose a threat to pedestrians' traffic. Since 2000 until now, 3 safety gates have been installed along the west side Max pedestrian crossing in 3 stations. You can find those photos of these gates in your packet. In my initial research from 2000, I found only 1 single collision on the west side since they installed those gates. Meanwhile, the east side had 18 collisions. When this bill came up in the Senate committee, TriMet provided the number of light rail collisions from 1994 to 2006, showing 102 collisions. 75 were pedestrians and 27 were bicyclists. In your packet, you will find a pie chart, Exhibit 1, that lists dates, locations, and districts of each collision. I compared those lists to my own research. I actually found 108 different collisions. The numbers from year 2000 show 80% of the collisions are on the east side compared to 20% on the west side. The facts are the facts. The gates on the west side work. Today I'm asking that you consider some amendment amendments to the Senate Bill 829, address one east side location in front of the Center for Advanced Learning where 430 advanced East County high school students attend. This location is also the connecting link and the only crossing between Gresham Station, a large multi-shopping center, with Gresham Station North, made up of residential buildings and businesses. It was recently reported in this area that Gresham Station North is scheduled to continue developing with a cinema theater and additional parking for Gresham Station. The Max Pedestrian Crossing at Civic Drive next to the school is a safety concern for the merchants and the residents in that area. In your packet, you will find the 50 signatures of these merchants on a petition that support this bill. I realize that placing safety gates at every Max pedestrian crossing is a task that must be considered many factors determined by experts. Senate Bill 829 calls for a study by a group of independent safety experts to make recommendations regarding the pedestrian Max crossing. I would like to add, starting my research of this bill, my representative, Linda Flores, had a difficult time getting the information. Neither party gave the information. Kelly Taylor from ODOT supplied me with their information from TriMet after the public hearing in the Senate. I compared ODOT and TriMet's information, and they are different. I included in your packet three additional exhibits. That's partly why I want an independent expert to look at their records and make the total picture available to you, since the information provided is not consistent. Senator Rick Metzger, Chair of Transportation, requested a copy of the Corby Report, which is in your packet. It clearly calls for a complete review on page 29 of the Corby Report. This report looks at pedestrians and bike safety in TriMet systems. And now we get to the heart of Senate Bill 829. The engineering report clearly defines as school zone is 600 feet from the light rail. It clearly states the barriers, channelization, and swing gates are a strong recommendation. The Corby report also included in your packet is Exhibit 5 and 6. There are three schools in Gresham that meet this criteria. Cal High School with 430 students, Gresham High School with 1,800 students, and Alpha High School with 65 students. Cal High School is posted 35 miles an hour. The distance from the school to the track is approximately 25 feet. At 35 miles an hour, it takes over a football field to stop. And this information is in TriMet's Light Rail Manual, which is Exhibit 7, and is in the Corby of Engineer report. But so far, the engineering recommendations have not been followed since 1999. Here I am in 2007. I'm here as a parent that doesn't want another family member to go through what I've been through. TriMet continues to build more MAX lines, but yet we haven't gone back to make it safe where MAX began in Gresham. So who's going to make it safe for the people? Since my son's death, I've been keeping track by listening and being told of deaths and injured on the east side. If pedestrian safety were a top priority on the east side, maybe some of these lives could have been saved. I cannot bring my son back from heaven, but I can make it safe for you and your family. Remember, I will never again get to tell my son I love him or hold him each night when I come home. In conclusion, I'm here as a mom. I've told you about my son. I gather the facts that you have not heard or seen before today. The facts are the facts. 80% collisions on the southeast side compared to 20% on the west side since 2000. I've told you why there's an urgent need to put a safety gate at Civic Drive in the MAX line. I hope you will consider the amendment to add the safety gates at this location. My representatives have also amended the bill so legislation can hold TriMet accountable to make it safe. Please make sure this passes the committee so it can go on to the House to become a law and save lives. My representatives have amended Senate Bill 829 to read Aaron's Bridge to Safety. I would not be here today if I hadn't lost my son, Aaron, to save you and your family. May God be with all of you as you make this decision. My son had a saying, dream big. Don't ever let the little things get in your way. That means, it's okay, Mom. You can't save me, but
but you can save someone else. Aaron's Bridge to Safety is what it's all about, making it safe for your children, your grandchildren, and everyone that you know. It's your decision. What is a life worth? Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Olivia Clark.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Olivia Clark. I'm representing TriMet here today and appreciate the opportunity to speak to Senate Bill 829. First of all, I'd just like to say that we're all deeply saddened by the very real tragedy that you've heard about here today. And we all regret any fatal accident involving light rail or an automobile or a bicycle. I'd like to say also before I proceed that the situation that you heard about today, TriMet is currently in court regarding this particular accident. TriMet does not object to the request in Senate Bill 829 as it came over from the Senate because we do believe that safety is a top priority. TriMet has a very good record and, in fact, has been a leader in developing safety design standards for the rest of the country. In 1999, TriMet hired Corby Engineering, which is an international firm, to review its entire system. And that was after a fatality on the west side where a 14-year-old boy dashed across the rail on a bike, I believe, around a crossing gate and was struck by a train. Corvi focused on our system, on how pedestrians interact with it, all the platform design, pedestrian crossings, sight lines, etc. And from that work, TriMet then incorporated changes into the existing system. In addition, it developed the design standards that were then used in the construction of Airport Max and Interstate Max. And since that time, those design standards have also been picked up by other light rail systems across the country, Sacramento, San Diego, Los Angeles, Calgary, Canada, St. Louis, and Minneapolis, and others. I would just like to reassure you also that in addition to incorporating safety standards into our system, each leg of the light rail system goes through a very rigorous review by third parties at multiple levels of government. We also have a system safety plan that is reviewed by the FTA. We have an internal rail change review committee that reviews all accidents and makes recommendations to management about changes. In 1999, when the Corby study was completed, one thing that they emphasized was that safety is really a three-legged stool. It's education, it's enforcement, and it's equipment or design. And I won't go into any details on those. I'll spare you that, but it's all on page two of my testimony, just some examples of what those are. And one thing that we did learn, too, is that TriMet uses a whole variety of appropriate design in different situations. It's not a one-size-fits-all for any particular situation. Lastly, you're probably wondering about what the safety record really is. And in the second handout I gave you that has the map on top of it, behind that you'll find the only national statistic that we could actually find. Safety information is pretty difficult to get a hold of from other properties around the country. It's not something that people make public lightly. They don't publish it necessarily on websites. But we do have a comparison here that we found in terms of boardings, a national figure, boardings, fatalities per number of boardings, and you can see that TriMet fares very well in that regard. That's on the second page of the second handout. In the 20 years that we've operated the light rail system, which began on the east side in 1986, there have been 17 pedestrian fatalities and 2 bicycle fatalities. And almost 80% of those fatalities have been either suicides, trespassing, those are individuals walking along trackways in restricted areas, or incidents where people were intoxicated as a contributing factor. Two of those fatalities were where people went around crossing gates. And since 1994, there have been a total of about 504 accidents throughout the system. And I think I've provided that information to you as well. In conclusion, I would just say that we don't object to this bill. We feel we have a good safety record, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions? Seeing none. All right. I'm call up Derek McIntyre.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here today to testify. My name is Derek McIntyre. I am a student at the Center for Advanced Learning, and I am representing Cal today. I'm also an employee in information technology downtown in the Portland downtown area. I'm an avid user of the MAX light rail system, and I ride it about every other day, sometimes every single day, so I know the importance and the convenience of the MAX system. However, that being said, I am concerned with the safety specifically around the area of the Center for Advanced Learning. Multiple times I've been walking to my car, crossing the tracks of MAX, with my head down after a hard day of work and learning, and I won't notice the MAX coming until one of my friends alerts me to it. Obviously, somebody stops me all these times, but there might be a time when someone might not do so. My cousin, Aaron Wagner, was struck by MAX and killed in 2003. With the construction of Gresham Station, the Center for Advanced Learning, and all the businesses surrounding the area, more people have come in heaps, and more people have to cross the MAX tracks every single day. It is extremely important to me that no one else should meet the same fate that my cousin did. I believe it is incredibly necessary to increase the amount of safety, especially in the Center for Advanced Learning area. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. All right. That's all I have signed up, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 829A, and I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 829A. Yes, Representative Tomei.
I move Senate Bill 829A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei has moved Senate Bill 829A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative.
I'm very good with that. Were there not amendments? Are we not doing the amendments?
No. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Those of the opinion, Senate Bill 829A should be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Butler, excuse. Representative Butler, excuse. Representative Gilman. Aye. Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye. The motion passes.
Madam Chair, would this be an appropriate bill to be on the consent calendar?
Is there an objection?
I don't know if Representative Lynn would be willing to carry it. As a constituent. Or who's the constituent? Who's the rep?
I
don't know.
Local
care.
Okay. If you allow us, we will co-carry.
All right. Thank you. All right. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 829A. And I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 568. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Pardon me. Senate Bill 568 requires the Department of Transportation to transfer the surcharges collected from the Crater Lake National Park Registration Plate Program to the Oregon Community Foundation. Currently, those funds are going deposited in the National Park Foundation. This would change, transfer those funds instead now to the Oregon Community Foundation. I will bring your attention to the fiscal statement. Those comments indicate that there's been collections between $533,000 and $582,000 per calendar year since 2004, and the department expects similar revenues in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. And committee, I don't have anyone signed up to speak to this bill, and I'm not really sure that I guess if I don't know why we're doing this. So,
well, it says here that we're doing it because we're going to hire return on investment.
Maybe
Doug
share his thoughts.
Do you know anything about this bill? You could give the testimony you heard over in the Senate, right?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jack Evans, Department of Transportation. Unfortunately, I can't speak as to the why.
Right.
Why that makes sense. Senator Atkinson, I believe, spoke to it on the Senate side. From our point of view, from DMV's point of view, it has no impact. It's simply we take the surcharge, take the administrative costs off of it, and send a check out to the organization that's specified, and this would just be changing the address to a different organization for us.
Madam Chair?
Representative Tomei?
To what organization does it go now?
It currently goes to the National Park Foundation, and it's for Crater Lake National Park.
Oh.
And I'm assuming that it'll still go to Crater Lake, but it...
Madam Chair, Representative Gilman, that is my understanding. It still is serving the same function as supporting Crater Lake. It's just a different organization is administering it.
Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, I realize I'm the only freshman here, but it seems to me maybe we should seek a little more guidance before we proceed.
I think as a freshman, that makes an awful lot of sense.
and
we're all thinking alike, right? And we will see what we can clarify on that. Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 568. And maybe we'll see it again. Maybe not. And I guess we will adjourn. And no meeting on Friday.
No meeting on Friday.